Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now let's take the same idea overseas. The World Bank estimates that 53 million more people will move into poverty this year due to the economic crisis. But how much attention will the world's poor even get at the G20 summit next week in London, when those 20 industrialized nations have enough problems of their own to deal with right now? And why, after all the years of foreign aid and international charity, do 25,000 people, roughly, still die every day of hunger-related causes? Jacqueline Novogratz is one of what might be called the new philanthropists who are looking for new answers in the fight against global poverty. She's the founder and CEO of the Acumen Fund, a nonprofit venture capital firm that tries to use entrepreneurship to combat global poverty. And she's the author of a new book, maybe you heard her on The Takeaway earlier this week, The Blue Sweater, Bridging the Gap Between Rich and Poor in an Interconnected World. Welcome, and I should say welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks so much.
There was such a strong response to that segment that we're glad we're having you here back a little later in the day. And for people who didn't hear it, I think we need to start with that blue sweater. What part did it play in international development?
Well, to tell you the story of the blue sweater, I was given a sweater by my Uncle Ed when I was 10 years old that had zebras running across the front, mountains across the chest. Wore it all the time, loved it, including into my freshman year of high school when my adolescent curves were changing the contours of the sweater. And I think there's a moment in every adolescent girl's life of complete humiliation, and mine was when my high school nemesis yelled across the hall that the boys didn't need to go to the mountains to ski anymore. They could use the mountains on my sweater. With that, ran home. My mother and I ceremoniously dumped it into the Goodwill. I thought I'd never have to see it again. 10 years later, 5,000 miles, I had left a career in Wall Street, and I was building a microfinance bank in Rwanda, and I saw a little boy a few meters in front of me wearing my blue sweater, ran up to the child, turned the collar, and sure enough, there was my name. And I hold that story as one of interconnectedness and a reminder that our action and inaction affect people all around the world.
And how did your sweater go from you to that person?
Well, the sweater went into the Goodwill, and from the Goodwill, it went into this enormous industry called secondhand clothing, which then arrives in the ports of Africa and East Asia and South Asia in big bundles, and then goes into sprawling markets where individuals sell them then to people all over the continent.
It's an amazing story. It's a needle in a haystack kind of.
It's a needle in a haystack.
Once in a lifetime coincidence. Was it life-changing for you? Did it get you into this work?
I had gotten into this work. I had moved, as I said, from banking into microfinance in 1986. But it was such a stark reminder of this connection that we have and that things that we may do on a small level can have enormous implications.
So talk about entrepreneurship. I mean, what can people do to make money? Because that's part of the point, right, is you want people who are interested in making money to get involved in alleviating poverty?
Well, there's a new kind of entrepreneurship in the world called social entrepreneurship. It's a breed of entrepreneurs who are more interested in solving problems using the tools of business than they are making money. And so Acumen Fund, our approach is called patient capital. Having, as you said before, looking at the markets and recognizing that markets alone will not solve problems of poverty, and certainly when the markets turn down, you see more millions and millions going back into poverty, but traditional charity and aid also will not. And so our approach, which is the approach of many social entrepreneurs, is one we call patient capital, and that is using investing in entrepreneurs for a long time, expecting below market returns and accompanying it with a lot of management assistance and seeing real change.
Tell us more about the old school charity, as you call it, and what you saw in Africa that convinced you that it doesn't work.
Well, literally trillions of dollars that were spent top down in a way that too often created dependency rather than real dignity, real opportunity for people to solve their own problems. And so when you look at the situation of water, for instance, $13 billion a year spent on water, we haven't really moved the needle as a world in getting water. Right now we have 1.2 billion people who have no access to safe water.
And you focus on entrepreneurship, but you describe in the book many businesses set up by charities to get the poor working that themselves perpetuate dependency. So what's missing in those cases?
I'm sorry, I didn't really understand.
Are there businesses set up by charities?
Yeah, but there definitely are businesses set up by charities, but often it depends on how the charity set up the business. What we're focused on are some nonprofits that have set up businesses, business-like approaches. For instance, Jami Bora, which is a nonprofit organization that has set up a for-profit housing development company for its members so that they can, over time, afford to purchase a house in a way that is financially sustainable, and you see lives really change in that way.
How's the economic crisis affecting your work? Has this world changed, too, in the last 6 months?
Oh, absolutely. And yet, at the same time, when the rich stumble, we can't let the poor fall off a cliff. And interestingly, in many of the markets in which we work, there's somewhat of an isolation because low-income people still need to get access to safe water and housing and health care. And typically, they pay 30 to 40 times what the middle class pays for that same water. So if you can build a company that delivers that water at a price that's affordable, they can change their lives.
Is there an irony here that countries that didn't focus on global trade are actually doing better? This would be some of the poorest countries in the world that weren't really connected into the global industrial system?
Yeah, we work in Pakistan, which has very little, really had no mortgage market to speak of, and saw significant growth, and today is in better financial shape, and we're seeing that in an organization with which we work called Saibon, also doing housing for the poor, as well as drip irrigation, which is a way of getting water to farmers in Pakistan so that they can double and triple their yields. And this is Acumen Fund's overall approach, taking this idea of patient capital where we raise philanthropic money and we invest in companies and nonprofits that are sustainable and can reach ultimately millions in a way that changes lives.
Do you make money from this?
Any money that comes back to Acumen Fund is reinvested in organizations that are doing this. And so our idea of using patient capital is that it translates into a permanent capital base in a nonprofit that invests rather than gives out handouts and changes lives that way.
I gather a lot of your work is focused on women.
Well, our work is focused on entrepreneurs. They often employ lots of women. We helped do the first technology transfer for long-lasting malaria bed nets, which are life-saving and a way of preventing malaria. Acumen Fund helped identify an African entrepreneur to produce these nets in Tanzania, helped facilitate a technology transfer from Sumitomo Chemical Company in Japan, made a loan to this company, provided it with a lot of management assistance in 2003. Today, A to Z Textiles employs 7,000 people, about 90% of whom are women. These women are now making the top quartile income levels, and so we're seeing enormous economic change, but also they're producing 20 million life-saving bed nets for Africans. So it's an example of investing in entrepreneurs to bring solutions to African people.
We heard before you came on two stories from our local area, one of a congregation in New Jersey that's doing reverse collections. They're giving out $20 to the congregants on Sunday as long as they match with their own $20 to give to a good cause. Then we heard the microfinancing in the New York City area aimed at green projects where the average donation or grant application really is about $400. How little money can you make a difference with?
Well, as you said, you can make a difference with $50 in an individual life. What Acumen Fund focuses on is million-dollar investments because we're looking at creating companies and organizations that in turn will affect millions of lives. And even if you look at $1 million, that's invested, knowing that you or hoping that you will get the money back while creating sustainable solutions, and compare that to government, traditional charity, or the markets that miss the poor altogether, it's still a relatively very small amount of charitable money that can make an enormous difference in society, not just in individuals' lives.
With the G20 summit coming up, do you have a position on what you'd like to see come out of it?
I'd like to see a whole focus from government in terms of moving away from top-down solutions only and recognizing the power of investing in innovation, investing in entrepreneurs. I believe that private innovation will lead to public change if we do this right. And really that's what the book, The Blue Sweater, is so much about. It's my own learning curve from coming to Africa with a very naive and idealistic perspective, thinking that, you know, we can change the world for others, and seeing the destructiveness that too much top-down aid can do. And over time, recognizing that there is a role for corporations, for governments, and for individual citizens to play in investing in private entrepreneurs with patient capital, and then leading the way for public change.
But is private philanthropy still dwarfed by the impact of the World Bank and IMF?
Well, by the impact or by the dollars?
Well, certainly by the dollars. What about the impact? I mean, and with what you said about traditional methods of fighting poverty, maybe they work in the opposite direction. Maybe they make your life harder.
You know, these are all those kinds of questions where you have it depends answers. But when you look at private philanthropy in the U.S. alone, we're looking at $250 billion a year. It's an enormous capital base. And if we thought more creatively and constructively about using that as patient capital for investment, recognizing there's an enormous role for charity as well, we could do more in seeing the problems of poverty solved.
Jacqueline Novogratz. Her book is The Blue Sweater, Bridging the Gap Between Rich and Poor in an Interconnected World. This has been really inspiring. Thank you so much, and good luck with your work.
Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. A reminder that coming up at 11:30 this morning, we'll have a call in for anyone who follows a webcam for fun or law enforcement. We want you to log on at 11:30. Call in and tell us what you're seeing in real time on any webcam. Okay, for example, Jeff from West Orange tipped us off to one a few minutes ago. He says the Franklin Institute in Philadelphia follows a pair of red-tailed hawks nesting on a window ledge outside a conference room. They've closed the conference room to keep from disturbing the birds, and they've set up a webcam to watch the pair nicknamed Scarlet and Red. What interesting, different, unusual, illuminating webcam do you follow from time to time? We want you to log on to it and then call in and tell us what you're seeing coming up in 1/2 hour from now. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.